New Minds AI. Eure wöchentliche Dosis KI mit Jens und Max. Seid dabei, wenn wir die Zukunft erkunden.
Moin und willkommen zu einer neuen Folge des New Minds AI Podcast, dem Podcast rund um das Thema generative KI. Und wir haben mal wieder eine neue Folge, wird mal wieder Zeit. Und zwar darf ich heute einen tollen Gast begrüßen, und zwar Steph, beziehungsweise Stefano Corazza. Und er sitzt in San Francisco und ist Head of AI Research bei Canva, dem Grafiktool, was du vielleicht auch nutzt, um Social Media Grafiken zu erstellen. Hat einige Researcher, eigene Modelle und sehr coole Leute auf jeden Fall dabei. Und mit Steph habe ich nicht nur über Tech-Themen gesprochen, sondern auch über Kreativität, weil für mich ist Canva auch einfach eine kreative Marke, und da stellt sich die Frage, wie man denn KI und Kreativität da kombiniert. Und das und vieles, vieles mehr habe ich mit Steph besprochen, und von daher wünsche ich dir jetzt erstmal viel, viel Spaß mit der Folge. Ab geht's! Alright, Steph, welcome to the show. So nice to have you here, and thanks for taking your time to talk with me about AI and what you're doing there at Canva.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right, cool. So for those who don't know you, maybe you can introduce yourself, who you are, where you're based, and what you're doing at Canva.
All right. So my name is Steph. I'm originally from Italy, where I did most of my studies. And then I moved here to the Bay Area, San Francisco, over 20 years ago. And I've been involved in like all kind of AI and creativity projects and companies, you know, from I was a researcher at Stanford University, but then we were applying a lot of machine learning to animation and the creative space. And so that led to a startup called Mixamo that was democratizing, using AI to democratize character animation. And then that company was acquired by Adobe, where I spent years building tools for creatives in the 3D space using AI as well. And now I spent some time at Roblox building AI agents for game development. And then now I'm Canva leading the AI research effort. And so for the last 20 years, I would say the common theme has been like using machine learning and AI to help creatives, to enable creatives, and to really help them express their ideas, their vision, and their concept. The tools have got dramatically better, but you know the mission was the same.
So cool. And what fascinates you about this combination? Because I think creatives don't always go along with machine learning. Why is this combination that you love and that you're doing for so many years now?
Yeah, I think I'm a split person on those myself. So I've done my part of my PhD at Stanford doing machine learning and computer vision. So getting that, you know, the technical background. But at the same time, I've always been doing artistic endeavors. You know, I've done like a music video for Bjork. I've done, you know, animated shorts, the award-winning animated shorts. At Mixamo, we work on Jurassic Park, the video game, and like all this artistic stuff. I've done art installations in museums where you embody like a bird flying through a forest. So there's always been like some artistic project going on, whether it was like, you know, museums, video, or like Burning Man. You know, Burning Man is pretty big here in San Francisco, and they actually, they gave me my first art grant when I was like fresh off the boat. So if you're basically constantly working with this artist community, and then you really understand the point of view, right? And then you have all these amazing machine learning and AI tools on the other side, you're constantly thinking, how can I use those tools to help, right? The artistic expression, and to make those concepts and ideas come to life more easily. So this has been like kind of a daily exercise, I would say, for myself, and a really fun one. And I got to meet a lot of really cool people at the intersection of AI and art, and learn a lot from them.
That's so cool. And before we dive into what you're doing at Canva, did you ever during the years felt threatened by technology when it comes to your creative space? Because usually what I witness is like you have just two sides. You have the creative people and you have the tech people. But usually they don't go hand in hand, and usually they try to avoid the other side because it's maybe threatened their human side or creativity or stuff like that.
Yeah, I haven't felt it threatened myself because I think the people forget that the artist is more interested in making his or her vision come to life than comparing what other artists are doing to what his work is, mm-hmm. right? So there's always this thing that like, oh yeah, but this thing, the AI is enabling everybody. So is it going to be harder for me to express what I need? And the answer is no. Yes, there will be more people, more noise. There's always going to be more noise. But the best idea, I think, still can break through. There is the tendency, I would say, here in the Bay Area, a lot of people that are mostly focused on the engineering tech side, thinking that, you know, there will be a magic button that will make a beautiful art and will replace artists. But like nobody really believes that is true, because the key piece for creating art and design is that it's a journey and it's an iterative process, right? It's not one button creates the art. If there was one button to create beautiful art, there would be such a little sense of ownership that people will now find it, you know, very interesting.
And I mean, if there would be a button like that, you would probably already have it implemented at Canva. Probably, hopefully. But going to your actual role right now, so you're doing AI research at Canva. What are you doing there? So what's your like typical day-to-day, if there's any typical day-to-day in AI? What are you up to?
Yeah, so that's a great question. You know, people always wonder, like, what's the day-to-day at the end, right? So we have like over 100 researchers that are spread around the world. We have offices in Beijing, in Sydney, in San Francisco, in London, and in Vienna. Those are like the main hubs for AI research. And every team, you know, we have a cycle, and every team will come up on a new cycle with like new ideas, new things they want to explore, new approaches to AI models. And we are constantly working on a wide portfolio of projects. Some of them are more like short term. You know, maybe we have a very popular model that now we want to make scale and then, you know, make it maybe more accessible, cheaper, so more people can use it. Or sometimes we have completely different approaches to doing the same thing, but now using AI and making the process like reinventing completely the process. So we do a lot of research, but we also do explorations. Sometimes we prototype really future looking approaches and creative workflows that then will inform the product. They will then, you know, realize, okay, this is a good idea. Let's actually build it. So it's a very fun project. I get to work with like the brightest researchers around the world on very different projects. You know, it could be design generation, could be video storytelling, could be evals, you know, evaluating AI models. So there's a huge variety, a lot of context switching, I'll tell you. But overall, it's really fun because it's one very clear mission, which is, you know, empowering the world to design. And so everybody is trying to think how we can help designers and creators of the world to realize their wildest dreams.
That's so cool, because when I think about researchers, I usually think about like the tech company, or I mean, Canva is a tech company, but more like the proper research companies like Google, like OpenAI and stuff, but not like a creative solution like Canva. So when you're talking about research and models, do you also train your own models?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we have our own foundational model, the Canva design model, which is basically very different from what you see out there in the sense that it does not generate flat images, but it actually generates editable designs, all broken down in layers. I think this is one of the key examples of how our approach is different. If you're using any of the tools out there and you prompt for a design, you're going to get a flat image. But that result is rarely what you want, right? Usually AI gets you to 70%, 80% there, but then you have to take it to 100% for the job to be complete. So it's worth sharing or sending to, you know, to your manager or the team and so on. And so if we provide just a flat image, the jump off point is pretty bad. Like, what do? Like, you have to bring it into a professional tool, separate the elements, try to tweak them. Mm-hmm. It won't look great and everything. And so instead, our approach is we want AI to generate designs that are not different from a design that is generated by a human. And so those designs are all fully editable. You can change the text. You can move the elements. You have all the layers. And so it's really easy then to do, you know, editing in Canva, in our editor, because all the elements are broken down, and then people can very easily take it to 100%. And this was so successful that we actually offer also the ability with our feature Magic Layer to take, you know, images that you created in, like, I don't know, Nano Banana or any other image model, you can bring into Canva, and then we also separate it out in all the elements for you. Of course, for our model, that is a native capability. Like, we always generate editable design, so that we really are true to our mission that the artistic process, design process is iterative. We'll take, you know, collaborators also to chime in many, many times. And so we wanted to basically enable that, and people this way perceive AI not as a threat, but as a companion. You know, one, it's just another collaborator that helps you get to where you want to be.
And in the end, people worked in Canva for years with this kind of layers in mind. So if you would only create flat images, it would, like, break their workflow, basically. But that's cool. I tried the Magic Layers as well. It was really, really cool to test the limits, how detailed it can get. I think a few months ago, I also tested a Quen model who did that. And it felt really cool to actually be able to edit an image and not just get something like a surprise tombola, where you're like, okay, what do I get, and how many times do I have to reprompt to get something I really want? Yeah. So that's cool. I got a bit of a tricky question for you, but I think with your position, that's, you're probably very aware to answer that. So what is creativity for you?
That's a great question. I think creativity is really the ability to think outside the box, outside categories, and then come up with, like, new ideas, or to connect, you know, different metaphors, different ideas in a new, completely, like, unexpected way. I think it's when you break out of the norm, of the standard, and really get to something that has not been thought before, or has not been connected in that way before.
And great answer, by the way. And how, from your perspective, is AI challenging that in a good and a bad way? Because, of course, with AI and the term AI slop, everyone is now on a new level creating content. But do you think that creating content outside of the box, or thinking outside of the box, got easier with AI? Or do you think, from your perspective, that people got more, let's say, creativity lazy and be like, okay, it's just working?
I'll give you two opposite answers to this really great question. The one answer about, like, oh, is AI creative or not? Well, you know, AI learn from humans, from previous humans, about to create art and beautiful paintings or manga style drawings or sketches, everything. But that's exactly how humans learn. You know, when I was in art school, you know, we were, like, drawing, you know, stuff from Leonardo, Michelangelo, all this stuff. And, like, we would just copy the exact same thing just to develop that skill, right? And so we did pretty much the exact same thing with AI. We fed all art history ever, you know, and then AI got really good and now can do all these styles, you know, in a surprising way. So I would challenge the idea that there's any difference between, you know, AI and humans, because we all learn from previous artists to try to create our craft, and then we try to bring it to the next level by adding new concept. So that's one side. The opposite side of that, I would say, AI is just a great way to sometimes add some random thoughts in your artistic process. Like you prompt something, you get a video, that's not what you wanted, but hey, they added this thing that I didn't think about it. Oh, I'm going to use it, right? So it's that part of the process where you throw a bunch of stuff to the wall, right? And then some stuff sticks, maybe it's like 1%. But it's actually a great tool for exploration because there's like a lot of ideas coming up in the process that then you say, oh, I didn't think about it, but that actually is a really good idea. I'm going to incorporate. I'll give you an example. Like I made a video with my kid like a week ago about us going in space and doing an exploration. And I wanted to have the last shot with the capsule, space capsule landing in a backyard. And then AI put a bunch of chickens going around it. And I was like, this is so brilliant. Of course, I'm going to use the chickens. It's going to make it like even more funny, right? But I didn't prompt for those, but it was a backyard, in a suburban area. And so I was like, oh, probably there should be chickens. And I was like, oh my God, this is a great idea. Let me do it. And then I did another pass perfecting that. And I actually prompted, I want 3 chickens going from the left to the right and everything. Right. So this is an example how it can really be like a multiplier in the brainstorming concepting phase.
I got another funny example on that, an accidentally caused brainstorming. I used a Chinese video model, which is really good at following prompts, where we did the on point, but I made a typo. So instead of, I think I wanted to have a rap crew, and I typed crap crew. So I got a rapping crap. Which was extremely crazy good. But it was also like, okay, cool. AI can do that. That's really crazy. But do you think from your position also at Canva and seeing how people are using AI over the years now, do you feel that people adapting this kind of, let's say, machine-driven brainstorming so far, or do you still have the feeling that people try to push their idea into the machines without looking too much left and right?
Yeah, I think there's like both workflows are currently used by users. It really depends what they're trying to do. It's very different if you're trying to make a slide deck for your meeting tomorrow morning and you already have all the material, you just need to organize and maybe put in some information, versus you're like starting a completely new film, episodic content, and you're like brainstorming the concept of the main character, right? These are like two completely different tasks that people also do both within Canva. And in one case, it's more like pragmatic, more utilitarian. And in the other case, actually, is where AI can be a great companion for brainstorming.
But do you feel in the, let's say, more creative part, people getting used to that? Because in Germany, so we're working with a lot of companies in Germany, and they have not only in the chat interface, but also in the whole creative part, they have a hard time getting into I brainstorm with this machine mode, because they're not used to that. They're used to look through stock photo pages, select something, and be like very in their areas where they're allowed to walk through, basically. Do you have the same feeling that people have a hard time in every age group?
Maybe. Honestly, yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen too much of that. We also have introduced Canva AI as a collaborator, because it's there in your comments. You can ask to do things. So it's really like frame as a collaborator to start with. And, I've scrolled through, for example, all the crazy concept images that people create on Leonardo.ai, which is also part of Canva, where they have a bunch of like user-generated stuff, and some of these are like completely wild. And so I think the first step is people get inspired about what other humans can create with AI and with the wildest imagination, and then they're like, oh, this is really cool stuff. Maybe I can also adopt that process. So I think sometimes these are two steps. First, you admire other artists, other humans like yourself, that have used AI and they've created something beautiful. And I think that is what pulls you in, like, hey, let me try this new. It's basically just a new creation technique. It's similar to when we went from, like, you know, oil painting to photography. You know, it's a similar jump. You can create a lot more content. You don't have to perfect for 20 years the, you know, brush stroke technique, but you can still create beautiful things. And so I think it's a little bit of a similar leap.
You can get the idea out of your head into something visual. That's true. And you were talking about inspiration, and I totally agree with you. Seeing what people are creating sparks ideas in my own head. When you worked on all the AI features in the last years and months, especially with the big relaunch you just recently had, was there something that surprised you what people did with the tools that you offered? So, because, I mean, if you look at all the big releases from Nano Banana and stuff, they were always like this somehow viral trends where, like, okay, this is cool and everyone loved that and nobody had the idea to do it before. Was there something that surprised you during the AI journey at Canva?
I think the thing that keeps surprising me every day almost, and is also tied to the original mission of Mixamo, which is basically taking anything and be able to animate it, is that people have found ways to bring to life pretty much anything, right? You can make a story with like a cardboard box, or like, you know, any object now can have eyes and mouth and have a perfect lip syncing just by, you know, prompting it, which is something that, you know, I've done a lot of VFX in Blender, in some of those artistic endeavors, and I know how time consuming that is to like rig a face, animate a face. I mean, it's just like 1 minute of animation will take like, you know, like a month to just generate, but now everything is accessible. The last one I saw was this like romantic story between two like crash dummies. They are actually alive, and that's their job, you know, they get crashed, but they have airbags and they're pretty resilient. So usually, you know, it's only a few scratches, but then at some point, you know, one of them is broken, they want to replace it. And so they basically run off and have like some romantic adventure. That was like so brilliant because, again, it's another example where like inanimated everyday object that we know now have a life, have a story, have a journey. So that I think is one of the areas where AI is the most inspiring. You know, I started like this festival called the Festival of the Impossible in like 2019, and one of the themes was really like thinking outside the box about what words can be alive in front of you, and like what things can be maybe exhibit like human behaviors, right? It's very interesting. Yeah. Exercise. If you look at reality and thinking about, oh, everything can have a feeling, like this handle that you move to get into that room, you know, maybe she's feeling cold or hot when you do that, you know, like it's with AI, you can just go there and like make everything be animatable and alive. Really fun.
Yeah, I think once you discovered that and you walk around in the world with that kind of skill that, you know, you can animate anything in a matter of seconds for cents, that's crazy. I think a couple of months ago, I was sitting at a fast food restaurant, had some fries in front of me, and the box was nice. I was bored. I did a picture, put it in a video model, and the box suddenly walked around, which was like...
Okay. You're a true artist. There it is.
And, I mean, you also do, beside the research, a lot of creative stuff. How crazy did your own workflow when you design something or do any kind of creative stuff changed over the last, I don't know, 5 years?
Completely, I would say. The last big project I've done in the video space was a collaboration with the musician Radical Face, where we made, basically during the pandemic, like a 45-minute animated episode of this beautiful story of a Hidden Hollow with original music and everything. And that took 900 screens that were hand-painted by the musician, incredible, And then I basically did all the VFX, so the fog, or the smoke, or fireflies, or the leaves blown by the wind, you know, all these like 3D VFX all done in Blender. And that took me like months to do that, you know, and everything. And I'm now like the approach is really like very different, because there, you know, you look at the shot and you start imagining, oh my God, how do I create that effect? And it goes into this week of exploration about, you know, particle simulation, like collision capsules and all that stuff. And now instead, like all the technicalities really, you know, disappear, and you really think about the idea. And one thing that the Ben, you know, the lead of Radical Face said to me one day, I was asking, okay, when are we making episode 2? And he said, I decided to now focus on the book, actually, because the book as an art form is the least constrained, right? If you think about it, every time you're trying to make a video and like, oh, there's going to be a spaceship that goes this, and then you're imagining the shot and like, oh my God, like this is going to take particle simulation. I need to do, you know, animate this thing, and like it's going to be smoke and flames. But now with the AI, the creativity is as unleashed as if you were just like writing a book, right? The book doesn't care about how complicated that shot is. Like, is the story in its purest form, without having to think about Tolkien, right? Lord of the Rings. Like, he was not thinking, oh my God, I have to animate 10,000 orcs, all different, fighting in this big epic battle, right? And so I think AI is bringing us to that level of unconstrained creativity, where you don't have to think about, oh my God, this is going to be so difficult to do. Let me cripple my story so that I can get it done in 3 months. Now instead, you can really go wild and really focus on the most incredible, mind-boggling thing you can think of, because, you know, it's not going to take that much effort. I mean, you probably have to generate 200 shots. Sometimes for a single shot, I get like 100, 200 generations. And I go through and I pick them. But then you're like, okay, this is the money shot. Okay, now we nail this. And then you build the story out from that. Mm-hmm. So very different approach.
Actually, I like the idea of the book, because I wanted to ask you if you think that this kind of expertise that might get lost, how to animate particles and how to create fog and stuff like that, if this get lost, then this would be a downside for creativity. But from your point of view, also with the book example, more and more people can focus on storytelling and telling stories, which is basically very human, right?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And I'll be very frank. Yes, some will be lost. Like, ask everybody they can take a photo if they can do oil painting, right? And the answer is it's going to be one. And so it's a little going to be a little bit the same. You know, there will still be space for that, you know, small cohort of people that really want to go deep into the medium, right? And the same will be for VFX, and especially for like high-end movies. They need full, complete control. And they need to generate 20 render passes of that thing they're doing. AI is not going to deliver that for a very long time, if ever, right? Because it's so specialized. So there's always going to be that, you know, tip of the spear. But again, a lot more people will just be able to access that creative production without having to master that art so deeply. So overall, I think, you know, books are still there. You know, when film came out, people, you know, I always think like the previous form of art is going to disappear, but it never did. You know, people paint. A lot of people do, like, you know, also for fun, because again, it's about the journey, more about the result. But you know, the vast majority is not going to have that deep skill set, but they will still be able to create.
And many people can now create their stories they have in their head. Do you think, it just came up in my mind, that the consumer side, so the people who are watching the movies, who got created with AI maybe or maybe not, Do you think, since we're at the current state, not, let's say, 100% consistent, we're very, very close, probably many, many items or many ideas, but maybe not perfect. Do you think that people on the other side will maybe focus even more on the story around that and less about, okay, this character maybe had a different hat in one setting, oh, it's crap. Because there will be so much imperfect content out there, which we weren't able to do before.
Yeah, it's a good point. So if the story is really strong, I think people are not going to focus on the small details, and they will get lost. I mean, there are so many things in a movie, like so many errors technically made that people never notice, right? There's a whole like blogs about it, like, oh, look, in this sequence, you know, in the 1200, this guy had a watch, you know, like stuff like that. Like the internet is full of those. But I don't think, I think if the story is strong, at the end, it's not going to be as important as we think. I know it's sometimes something you pay attention to because it's like, you know, the error. And so people tend to focus. And I have seen now, you know, character consistency, you named, was probably the biggest problem, you know, for AI. For a while, and I think now with the latest models, it's getting pretty good, and so we don't see that as. I created some AI movies of myself in the past with a single reference photo, and it was clearly did not look like me. It was kind of weird and creepy. This was like 6 months ago, and now the last one I did, I had three reference images instead of two, but it was like pretty much indistinguishable. You always have to, you know, people sometimes forget, like, you always have to get the reference image with the different positions of the mouth because AI is going to hallucinate your teeth, and our teeth are all completely different, you know, even though we think they're all the same, but sure. They're so unique. So you just have to feed it, like, all the right, you know, some extreme poses, and, like, it's the same thing that you do when you have an artist doing the 3D model of yourself. But once you do that, and now models can take multiple reference images as an input, which they couldn't do, you know, just a few months ago, I think at that point, the consistency is pretty good. And I think we are kind of past that hurdle.
Yeah, it's crazy if you just look back 2 years or so where the models back then, especially the video models were, and now I always try like the prompts do a person doing a backflip or something in the video models, and it's crazy how good and how
that's a great
correct yeah. physical movement
yeah, got or like became. Another great test is like piano, you know, it used to be the big old 6-7 fingers, you know.
that's true. Yeah. Also a good one. And When talking about, you mentioned different models, you said you have your own model. From a research and also from a product position part, how do you decide what to build and what to buy? Because, I mean, building a model is not a simple task, I would assume. There are many, many models out there that are already good. How do you handle how much research you put in versus how much you buy? But because in the end, the user see a result and probably won't select too many different models or something.
This is such a great question. In fact, it's like core to basically our strategy in research. Our process is we identify an opportunity to simplify a task or make something, you know, 10 times easier, faster, and more effective. And the first thing we do is we figure out what is the quickest way to get in front of users. And so in that case, it doesn't have to be our own model. We can use third-party models. We will just pick the best model we can find, get into the feature, put in front of users. At that point, we get a lot of feedback. You know, no strategy survives, you know, first encounter with the enemy. So usually all your assumptions, you know, get changed, and that's great. So you want to do that, you know, as quickly as possible. But most importantly, we start acquiring data about how this feature is used. And then we can use that data to train or fine-tune our own models, right? And so the data flywheel starts the moment you put the AI capability in front of the users. And then you learn from a product perspective what they need, but also you see a lot of interaction. And so you can, with the user permission, of course, that we always ask, you can start using that data to feed to and to create your own model. And so our big advantage is that, you know, we have 260 million designers on an editor, right? Taking the result of AI and making it better. And so we're trying to basically learn from that so that the next time they don't have to do all that work to get it to 100%. And every iteration, we are a little bit closer to 100%. We'll never be 100% unless, you know, you read the mind of people. But at least, you know, we try to get closer and to know our users better and try to, you know, get closer to what they want to create at the end.
That's actually a smart move to use like the third-party models to like a prototyping example and test with that and then fine-tune based on the data. That's cool. And how much of the work with models are already based on open source models, which getting better and better, and open weight models?
Yeah, definitely the open weights and open source models have created like a massive contribution in the community for people to basically take it and then bring it to the next level and tune it for what they need. So this is something also we are using. There are, you know, three flavors. Using, you know, straight third-party tools, fine-tuning some open source model, and then also building things from scratch. And I think we do, you know, we pick which strategies to go after as a function of like how costly is that AI capability, how specific to design is, how much specific data we have to train it. You know, if you're using a general purpose model to do a very simple task, it's very inefficient. And then if you have like 100 million people doing it every day, then it's going to be a problem, right? And so sometimes we find, you know, okay, this capability is actually quite well defined. We have the data to train it, and then we will just train our own model from scratch for those very like specific tasks. And so, yeah, it's, again, it's a case by case, and all these three options are available to us. And of course, they have different costs and timelines to bring to market. But, you know, at the end, you know, in the long run, they make sense.
That is cool that you have all the, you have the data, you have the users who do creative stuff every day. That's super powerful. And talking about the users, what do they want actually when it comes to AI? Do users want highest quality? Do they hate to wait? Do they want fast stuff? What do users expect when it comes to AI, who are not like the AI nerds, but more like the everyday creating people?
Yeah, I think every designer and every user of Canva has different goals and different expectations to some extent, right? Depending what's their job. But I can mention like a few things. So for example, people really care about style consistency. Right, they want to create a design that, you know, every slide or every page of the book needs to have a similar style. So we introduced for the this style transfer AI capabilities, where you can basically incorporate new graphics or photos and say style it like this design. So we call it like design aware generation. And so style consistency was a big one. Sometimes style consistency means to be on brand, especially if you're working at a large company and you're making content, that content needs to be on brand. So in that case, the user wants AI to be able to stay on brand and leverage all the brand kit information. And, you know, in some other cases, people also, you mentioned actually fast. I think that's one of the most important features. Yeah, the first version of like NanoBanana that came out was taking, I think, 90 seconds. To generate. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, people wait at the beginning 90 seconds because the capability was so new and so great. But now nobody will wait that long. And so we were pushed, actually, our image to video feature now takes 11 seconds. And we're trying to get it below 10, because 10 seconds, if you're coming from the gaming world, 10 seconds is the absolute maximum amount of time someone will wait for anything, and you will still have to make like a mini game or like something, you know, to entertain them. But like 10 seconds, you know, talking when I was a Roblox talking to a lot of the game developers, I was asking them, what's the longest time that your user can wait for AI to generate something? Because we were generating words and 3D objects and everything. And so 10 seconds was the magic number. And I think once you get below that, then people start using it more, like start integrating it into the workflow a lot more easily.
Do you think the change will be massive once we unlock a good quality real-time generation of everything, basically?
100%. That's the final destination, real-time editing. We have already seen some examples. I was at GTC a few months ago, and we saw some example of Runway running on future hardware, and being able to prompt in real time, and the video will update. I think we have LTX also shows some real-time video generation capabilities. I think we're getting there. You know, our model takes 5 seconds to generate a 5 seconds video at 480p, right? So technically, it's real time. I mean, you still have 5 seconds, but I'm just saying, like, the time to create one frame is the time of that frame. So we are getting there, and I think it's going to be transformative because it becomes almost like a video game where you can say, oh, I want the hand of the actor to be over here. You can just go there and then drag it, right? And then the new video gets generated on the fly. So it's going to open up the opportunity for completely new user experiences and a lot more innovation, for sure.
I mean, we saw some generative gaming engines already. And I mean, you're coming from a gaming background. Imagine to don't script a game, but generate a game and generating environments. I think also for creative people, it must be crazy if you just generate a world and you can change it instantly. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, the challenge there becomes like who pays for the compute, right? Because it's extremely heavy. You know, we have seen Genie 3. We tried things like this at Roblox as well. I think it was a very interesting idea, like that you can just prompt the generation of the whole world. It is still like something that can run on device, can scale. Something that is so expensive to generate in the cloud, it's going to be harder. You know, we have seen a lot of attempts to stream pixels, and they have failed because the economics are not there. But yeah, it's quite interesting technology.
Do you think, so from what you're hearing and seeing, that there is still a lot of foundation research to be done and to be maybe to discover? Just need to be a new model paradigm shift whatsoever, and then suddenly everything's working and basically everything is fast and free, not free, but very cheap. Do you think there's a lot of foundation work to be done still?
If I said no, I think in 1 week I will be proven wrong. there's always like completely different approaches that come to life and they make things, I don't know how many 2x faster breakthrough we had in the last year, but like so many, right? So I think they're going to continue. When you get to like 4K resolution and it's real time and it's perfect, like character consistency and everything, then you're going to ask yourself, what else do I need, more than this, right? Is this enough for like 95% or there's like more to it? I think at that point, when we get like real-time generation of 4K resolution, then it's like, do we need more? I think the progression will continue of the technology. It's just like at some point it's going to get good enough that we won't appreciate too much the differences of the new model, maybe.
I think sometimes when there are new capability from models in any direction, sometimes I think, okay, what now? What comes next? How this AI image model can be even better? And then there's something, and it's, of course, it's obvious. I think we sometimes are also limited by our own thoughts, what could be possible, and then it's there, and we're like, yeah, okay, makes sense.
Yeah, but there are like some kind of guidelines. So we want things that are, they have better prompt adherence, right? That's one dimension. Higher resolution, higher quality, like artistic quality of the output, and then fast, right? So speed is another. Mm. So those four are pretty solid, and I would say pretty recognized axis, if you want, of how a model can get better. And then maybe in the future there will be, you know, more things added to that. But I think those four are a good starting point. And I see now new models having a more like incremental difference to the previous one. I think there's a little bit of like convergence towards the place where like it's going to be good enough for like 90% of people.
Yeah, I think it's going to be crazy in so many levels. And then there's, I don't know, a new addition and everyone wearing smart glasses, and suddenly you need AI generated environments in your smart glasses instantly in 4K or 8K or whatsoever. Who knows what will come. Looking a little bit in the future, do you think a few years from now, I mean, in AI, it's crazy to judge, the concept of a, let's say, creative project like a Canva file will still exist? Or do you think also, beside the things we already talked about, that the way we interact with machines will change also creative space, because we used to keyboard and mouse? Do you think maybe voice will play a big role in how we do creative stuff?
Yeah, we have experimented a lot with voice, and I think definitely has a space to it. There also like gesture is another way to drive, you know, more basically to drive the intent and to have the machine understand the intent. I think now that the machines are becoming more and more powerful in following the intent, first as a prompt, but in the future, you know, in many other different ways, I think people will focus on like, okay, how do I let a human express more intent? Now the AI can ingest all of it, make sense of it, and be very respectful to it. And so examples are, you said voice on top of the usual, you know, keyboard and mouse, of course, but also I'm thinking, you know, reference images, or a gesture if you're trying to get the right performance, or you know, it could be you know, folders of brand definition for your company, right? So you have like, you know, hundreds or thousands of files that are relevant to what you're trying to create, and you want to get access to those files to AI. So I think there's going to be just unified efforts to ingest as much intent as possible, because AI now will be able to make sense of all of that and then provide something that is really close to what you want. So I think that is a push towards like aggregating different interfaces, different, you know, file systems, databases that describe, you know, who you are, what you're doing, your intent, and then bring them all into one place, which is, I think, what also Canva has done, right? You're like, you don't download a Canva file, right, anymore. It's all in the cloud, you know, and we are also the only company out there who has a single format for all the document types, right? Whether it is a spreadsheet, a website, or a document, or a slide deck, or a video, this is all one single type of format. And so that, you know, allows us to get really good at that, you know, process of converging all the intent and feeding this multimodal content to AI to get as a result out what the user wants.
That's cool. And in the end, the only surface left is probably direct connection to the brain. Exactly. To your thought.
Yeah, and we see some experiments where people can use MRI or like some EEG casket to extract basically images that you imagine from your brain, right, at the very low resolution, but then you can pass it into, you know, an image generator, and then you get the full picture. So maybe there will be a future where, you know, you wake up in the morning and you can watch your dreams, right?
That's crazy. That's a interesting future for sure. I don't know if you always want to watch your dreams, but yeah, that would be nice. And which brings me to the last question, also a little bit about the future. So if you talk to young people, young creatives maybe, who looking forward or also maybe a bit overwhelmed by the last years of technology, of shifting what is possible, what kind of skill should young creative people learn from your point of view to be ready for the future?
That's a great question that I get quite often. I think the the focus has shifted from the craft and really mastering the specific craft to be more of a director, right? So the high level view, making the story compelling, exciting, making your message compelling, exciting, connecting with your audience, and really have more of a director viewpoint than a craftsman viewpoint. I think that is going to be important. Understanding how humans connect to each other, how do they react to emotions, what emotions they like to, you know, to experience. I think those more like high level views of the world, I think, are going to be very, very important. And, you know, the ability to really take some inputs and distill it into a concept, a story, or something that is compelling that then can be materialized into, like, you know, a video, a presentation, or a work of art. So I think all those, like, everybody basically is now automatically graduating to director, if you want, you know, in the art school. And that's where I think is going to be the future, like a place where, like, the best idea will win, as opposed to, you know, the best technical execution.
I mean, that's a cool, like last point, that in the end, ideas, the best idea win. And we now have technology who can support the best ideas and not the best, I don't know, the most time spent on tutorials learning something to push out an idea.
Totally.
That's cool. Steph, thanks a lot for your time. Thanks a lot for all the insights from your journey, from Canva, from research also. I also learned new stuff. Thanks a lot for spending the time with us and sharing all your thoughts with us.
Thank you so much. It was a true pleasure.
All right. Thanks. And talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.